Anything said in this podcast is our opinion, and while our aim is to explore the weird and wonderful world of humans in a non-judgmental way, we apologize if we don't always achieve this perfectly. It goes without saying that this podcast is for entertainment purposes and should not be taken as medical fact or in lieu of professional advice. Enjoy the show. Hello, my name is Emma.
And I am Danny.
And welcome to our podcast, What's Not Wrong With Us?
Where we will share our interest in the human experience, from toxic overthinking to the art of complaining and everything, and I mean everything, in between. But most of all, what is not wrong with us?
Are there times when you feel out on your own, afraid that you're the only one? Something strange, something unique. Is it you?
Is it me?
Well, we're here to tell you what's not wrong with you. What's not wrong with us?
Hello again, everyone.
Greetings and salutations.
We are very happy to be here. We're starting to feel a little bit more comfortable in our podcasting space. Would you agree, Danny?
I am filling the podcast jumper nicely. I feel well equipped in all things that I am doing. How do you feel?
I feel really good. And I think one of the things that's helped us is we've been editing like quite severely the first three episodes. And even within those first three episodes, I think we have grown. We have learned. We have developed. Editing those episodes has been a learning journey.
It was like Devil Wears Prada and just so much cutting. So much cutting had to be done. There was coughing, there was spluttering, there was, I don't know, involuntary actions. There was a lot of me waffling on about things that were just not needing to be spoken about at length, but not knowing when to shut up.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So my other podcast, I have a rough script that I follow. Yes, I know I've mentioned it a number of times. So Thanks Therapy, my other podcast, we follow a rough script and we go off script all the time, obviously, and it's not scripted, in inverted commas, which I listen to lots of scripted podcasts and that's fine as well. This is a new experience for me and I have mixed feelings about it, but I'm warming to it. I am warming to it.
Isn't it funny how much we're having to warm at the minute, because apparently we live in the Arctic Circle.
Yes, where it's extremely cold.
Horizontal snow and all kinds of freak weather at the minute in March.
Well, so I was thinking about this today. So people always say, you know, the Prince song, sometimes there's snow in April, or something like that is a line. Sometimes there's snow in May. And there was an extremely unseasonable level of snowfall in March 10 years ago when Charlie was a baby, maybe 9 years ago then. So he was a baby, but we had like several feet of snow in March. So it does happen. March, the saying is, in like a lion, out like a lamb. We are experiencing that for sure.
We are in the
roar
of the lion currently.
Yeah. So there's snow on the ground currently outside as we speak.
Having said that, listeners will remember the ice skating rink that was outside Emma's house previously. Yeah. It is not that bad, thank God. But it's enough that it's noteworthy.
Yeah. I mean, it's safer to walk on for sure. But
only just.
Yeah. So yes, tell us what the weather's like where you are. Message us in the comments or whatever.
Guys, we're just middle-aged and, you know, weather is really important. It's a topic of conversation, as are all these things that we're going to talk about this evening. But I feel like just lean in, you know, talk about the weather.
Well, I was telling you earlier that I went to the shop today in the full, you know that you've hit 40 and that you no longer have any self-consciousness whatsoever. When you go to the shop in trainers, tracksuit bottoms, your son's hoodie, your son's football hat, the hoodie hood pulled up over the football hat, gloves, and like a semi-formal coat over the top.
But it's also giving like undercover celebrity as well, just like I'm out doing things like normal people do.
Yeah, well, I was the shopkeepers were all looking at me because they were inside in a heated shop and I was like, yes, this is all justified, I promise you. So, are you ready for today, Danny?
Yes. And can I also say, enjoying the new format, enjoying the, you know, passing of the back and forth of responsibility, because it was lovely to come in today and just be like, I'm just here to talk. I don't have to think. I don't have to prepare. I'm here to talk. It's wonderful.
Yes. Well, because it's my week to share a thing, I'm enjoying it less.
Le baton est passé.
No, but do you know what? It's fine. So this is something that has interested me for a while. Mm. It's something that I, you know, think about personally with regard to myself, but it's not one of those things like, I do this weird thing.
Yeah.
I dissociate sometimes or whatever. It's more like this is something that we all have relation to, right?
Yes.
And what it is the introvert-extrovert spectrum.
Oh, wow.
Right? Okay. Which I don't think is a spectrum, but I'll get onto that anyway. Right. Wow. So I always presumed I was an extrovert.
Okay.
Because I performed my whole life. So at age three, on the stage, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I was one of the Oompa Loompas, obviously. Mm-hmm. Was shy to get on the stage, but then they couldn't get me off the stage again. So my uncle had to come on, drag me off the stage. I was taking repeated bows. I had found my audience.
Yes.
And things just went on from there, pretty much. So as you know, I did all that theater and then I got into singing. So mm-hmm. I was always on the stage. And, you know, like socially in parties and stuff, I would have been loud, talking a lot, friendly, that kind of thing. So I never thought of myself in any way related to introversion.
Yes.
Introversion was on a whole other yes. spectrum to me. But then somebody bought me a book, and it's a book called Quiet by Susan Cain. And the full title is Quiet. So The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. So in it, she talks about how she's a successful psychology professor, I think. Mm-hmm. And she does a lot of talks in different places and stuff like that. And people would have rarely realized that she was an introvert. But how that introversion presents to her is that when she goes to a conference or she goes, you know, to a talk or something like that, and afterwards she would feel totally drained. Mm-hmm. And so if she was at a conference, she might be social during the conference, hold conversations, give a talk in front of hundreds of people. But then she would have to go back to her hotel room and like decompress and
yeah.
spend her time alone until the next time, the next morning came. And as I got older, I recognized this more and more in myself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I think I'm kind of shyer than people expect me to be. So I can go up on stage and do whatever, but then I might be nervous about speaking in a meeting or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not really that good at making new social connections. Mm-hmm. I would say I was going to use the phrase anti-friends, but that's not what I mean. What, like, if you say you took me and somebody else, right? They would meet a crowd of new people and be like, oh, I want to be friends with them. I want to, by the end of this interaction, I would like to have everybody's number and be in a WhatsApp group with
yeah.
them. And I am almost the opposite of that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not that I don't want new social connections. And as I've got older and my social connections have dwindled, I would like some more new social connections. Mm-hmm. But I'm not that good at it.
Yeah.
I'm not good at making those connections. And I think that that is part of my introversion. So my parents, my dad was almost completely an extrovert,
mm-hmm.
if there is such a thing, which again, I'll come on to. And my mum is much more of an introvert, much more like, no, I don't want to go out. Mm-hmm. No, I don't want to go to the party. No, I don't want to do the thing. I'm quite happy here in the house by myself, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I got a bit of both of that.
Yeah.
And I think whereas we used to think there was like you were either an introvert or either an
yes.
extrovert, and then everybody was like, hold on, that doesn't seem right, maybe some people are mixed. I think actually that it's more like it's not a spectrum, because I don't think you're you know, you trend towards one side or trend towards the other. I think it's more like a stew. Mm-hmm. And you have parts of you that are maybe behaving in an extrovert way and parts of you that behave in an introvert way.
Yeah.
And that you could also be different in different contexts.
Absolutely.
What do you think about this?
I have so many thoughts. So first thought is that very similarly to you, I think I have attributes of this where I'm both in that I, for a period of my life, was labeled as socially intense.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm too extroverted and can be too much in certain situations.
Hmm.
When
I get drunk sometimes. It's referred to as Hurricane Wilson.
Yes.
And just
heard of this.
Yeah, Hurricane Danny. And it sort of turns into this, like, you know, tidal wave of just cause and destruction because I'm just more energy, more attention, more. At my 30th birthday, someone made the mistake of giving me a microphone and I used it to individually dress down anyone who was in my eye line to bite and comment on what they had brought in terms of what they were wearing. Because I thought that was funny and, you know, it was a performative moment and let's go for it sort of thing.
It was funny for me, like, only just because I was going, what is going on here?
Also, let's not stand too close in case he picks me out of the crowd.
Mm, I was sitting down kind of behind Marty.
In the darkness. Like,
don't look at me.
And then in other situations, though, I'm incredibly introverted where I can't go to any kind of big stand-up music gig because the crowdsness of it and the pushing and the shoving, I mean, sends me into complete anxiety. I get really intense social anxiety in new groups of people. It's funny, you were talking there about social connections and friendships. I used to have this thing where I would actively say, no new friends.
Yeah.
I am at capacity of friendship. I require no more. Because there was something in me about having to make, I think it's because on the extrovertedness in the vein of friendship, the problem is that you have to give so much of yourself to another person. So I think whenever you're younger, especially whenever you're like a child, you are in situations where you're constantly having to give of yourself because you don't know what your own resource is yet. You're still forming and finding that. Then as you get older, like university and stuff, when you're making friends, you're, you know, wee bit more adult and sort of, but it's the first time you've had to make friends since school or whatever. It's, you know, slightly less and you make a much smaller pool of people. And then if you have to get jobs and things, you make work friends, but you very clearly categorize them as work friends and not your actual friends. Because again, it's like another layer of sort of separation. There's something though about the idea now of me sitting down and thinking, I'm going to have to go out and meet new people and make new friends. So a prime example of this is I made a decision about a year ago that I was going to go out and try and make more queer friends, like LGBT friends of some kind. Because
I would also like to do that.
Yes, right. So I decided to go through, you know, classic proactive Danny, goes online, finds a group, sees if I can attend said group.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like the gay men's social club.
Right.
And I was a bit like, what is this? Like, are we going to put our keys in a bowl? What is going to happen here? Like, what is the situation? Like, going very much like scared and afraid, like what's going to happen? So we went to the first meeting and it was fine. It was very benign. We sat in this lovely man's front room and sat and had tea and talked about things and just very conversational. But it was actually much more around, there was people there, like I remember distinctly, there was a man there who was in his 60s who had been closeted his whole life and had now come out and was so isolated, and so lonely that he was just like desperate for friendship. But I was really like, oh no, this is like, you know, the ghost.
It's not
of,
what I was looking for.
The ghost of Christmas yet to come sort of thing. And I was like, no. And it really put me off. Like, it was really scary. I was just like, this is what lack of social interaction of this kind has. No, that's not for me. I don't want that.
It
put me off massively. So I think there's part of it where to circle all the way back around from my cul-de-sac of chat to what we started off from, I think there's part of it where, as you say, it depends on the situation that you're in. And there's lots of factors that can affect what makes you more or less extroverted, introverted.
Yeah, 100%. And I, Marty has just mentioned to me a friend of ours, John Moriarty, has, I don't know if this is his theory or if this is a theory that exists in the world that he has explained to Marty about social introversion or extroversion and intellectual introversion or extroversion. And I think this is kind of what I was trying to describe when I was thinking about this. In that,
well, first of all, what are those things?
Well, I would like John Moriarty to explain. I've asked Marty for more details because I can't really explain it. I can understand the social introversion, extroversion, right? So some people are just like, they're like, a party is my idea of hell, right?
Yes.
Now, I love a party. I really love a party with people that I know, especially.
Well, I was going to say, or a party where you have a strong contingent of people that you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So he said here, this is what Marty has sent me. So I'm not sure how this is going to read. Okay. So the social version is what is generally thought of as the intro extroversion spectrum. And then some people are maybe private problem solvers who want to go away and solve a problem by themselves. So this is the intellectual spectrum.
Oh, okay.
And some people who would like to be would like to solve a problem in a group. Some people are like,
oh,
you know,
do everything by committee. Yeah. I'm a committee.
Yeah,
person.
Let's get together and have a meeting and sort this out. So my boss is a classic social or intellectual extrovert. Mm-hmm. She wants us all to do things collectively. That's why she likes us in the office, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff. Sometimes I think an intellectual introvert, how you might describe that is if you have a lot of knowledge and you're sort of scared to share it about something, which so sometimes I find myself holding back. Because to be quite honest with you, it can come off as dicky.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So if you were to say to me, oh, what is the introversion? And I was to go, well, let me tell you all the theory behind it and blah, 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 and all this sort of stuff. I know you might kind of go, oh, you know, this is annoying.
I wanted the executive summary.
Well, I do know some people like this who, like, you mention one thing and they go off on all of the theory. Well, Johnson 2006 said that, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm kind of like, I mean, I was sort of wanting to discuss it a little bit and not be lectured. That's it. That's the word I'm looking
for. It's interesting you say that actually, because I get that a lot as well, where I stray into know-it-all-y territory. Only because I don't know, like, I wouldn't call myself an overly intellectual person, but it's just things have just naturally kind of migrated into my brain where I just know random things about things. Or sometimes I feel like I know things. I don't know if they actually are true or not, but I just feel like that's a logical reason for why that would be. And there's something in my brain that tells me I heard that somewhere once.
You're super bright. So are you confused about this?
Well, no, it's more just because
I just have to let Dan know. It's actually a very intelligent man.
I think it's more just, so my issue is that I am hyper literal. Mm-hmm. So if you ask, what is blah? My reaction is, blah is da 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 da.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're wanting a more nuanced, like as you said, a conversation around it, I would need the question to be more like, I would like to have a conversation around what blah, 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 blah is. And because that kind of opens me out to the, oh, well, this isn't me explaining it to you. This is us talking about what the explanation is together.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of like social or intellectual extroversion, oh, that was a lot of like word forms there to work out what that was. I definitely think I land on the extroverted side of that only because for me, especially if something is like private knowledge. So whenever my ex and I broke up, I really hated the fact that I had to tell the story multiple times over and over again.
Yeah.
I wanted to do it all at once in one group. And if I could have had everybody who I wanted to tell it to around a table and I was like, can we brainstorm what I do next now, please?
Yeah.
That would have been fantastic for me because it would just have been like a, we're all together. And I think it's also just like the reassurance of, because I have a lot of self-doubt and my own conviction with things. So it's just the reassurance of, no, other people are agreeing that this is a good idea.
Yeah.
I have a lot of time where I spend being like, that's maybe not. And then like you hum and you ha and you just, oh, I'll wait for it to be more obvious and be more clear. When actually you're like, is it real?
Yeah.
Necessary?
Yeah. So I think that's an important thing about the context. So this is what I was saying is, I think it's more like a stew. Mm-hmm. So people have bits of them that are introverted, bits of them are extroverted. They're a bit of a mix, all that kind of stuff. I do know some people who I'll describe in a minute who are very extroverted, if not maybe a true extrovert. But I think that then there's most people are just a mixture, but then it depends on the context.
Yeah.
So I could get up on stage and I could sing and I could also talk as if I'm confident with the crowd. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, because when you have a background in drama training, what happens is when you go up and speak, give a presentation or whatever, everybody's always like, wow, you weren't nervous at all. You were so confident. And actually that's just the drama training because you could be feeling nervous inside and it won't show. And that happens with all of the other people who went to my auntie, Gwyneth Murdoch, for drama training.
Absolutely.
They all get that when they're doing things in work. Mm-hmm. People are always like, God, you're really confident. And they're like, I was shitting myself, actually. Yeah. But you just don't, you can't
tell.
But
I'm acting, darling. You'll never know.
So the point about that is then in another context, so in a meeting, just as you were saying about like, if I could have had everybody around the table or whatever and I could have had a big confab, I realized that I'm just not that good at talking in the language that a lot of other people are good at talking about. So despite the fact that I'm a good researcher, right, I'm not talking about it in a terribly convincing way in a group setting. I'm not. And it's partly because that's never been my communication style.
Yeah.
So this, I literally worked this out yesterday. Mm-hmm. This is how fresh this information is in my head.
Straight from the presses.
So because I was a counsellor, so my communication style was mostly listen to what people are saying and then give reflections that you hope are insightful, empathetic and, you know, caring, compassion and stuff like that. I was literally never trying to tell those people how clever I was or how all of the knowledge that I had. That was never my communication style. And so while you do learn it a little bit while you're in doing your PhD training and stuff, maybe you do a wee presentation here or there. When you get into a job, you've had very little experience of sitting around a table and convincingly and articulately talking about, you know, all the aspects of your research, research that's relevant to it, all the processes, all the thing kind of thing. And my boss is very keen on the language being like, not just, if I was going to do that, I would do it in quite a matter of fact way, like literally report the facts.
Yes.
And I think she would like me to use like words like, you know, significant and, you know, important and, you know, dynamic and, you know, all words that emphasize that what you've done is really something, you know. And it's just not in, it's not in me. And I'm going to have to come up with a form of bullshit that I can get away with in meetings that doesn't, you know, eat away at my soul or whatever. Because I'm just not good at that. I'm quite shy in those kind of situations and I hold back. That's not where my extroversion lies at all.
It's honestly, I was like clenching here on the side of the desk because I was like, Emma and I are living parallel lives. I am having the exact same problem. I call it corporate speak, and it is just, it's basically people talking just in casual times. And by casual, I mean like you're not being interviewed. It doesn't directly relate to your job. It's not part of an assessment. It's just you're talking in a meeting, but you're talking as if you're selling yourself and you're having to advertise the intellect that you bring to that table. And I just, I mean, I've sat in meetings now around where people are talking about all manner of strategic drivers or policy documents or, like at the minute, for example, in Northern Ireland, we have the Windsor framework that's just come out that everyone's like a buzz about in terms of what does it mean. And as you say, like my conversation or my communication style, you always talk for the person in the room who knows the least about what you're talking about. So you always assume no one knows anything and then you build whatever you're talking about up from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always done it like that. I think it comes partly from doing drama stuff and it comes partly from the fact that I did a bit of youth work. So you're always just assume people know nothing and build up from there. I am in rooms now where every other thing said is an acronym or an acronym that you've never heard of before, or worse still, an acronym that then becomes a new word that people then say that word as a thing. So you just spend the whole lot of time having no confidence in like what it is that you are talking about. So the other day, they started talking about an allo this, allo that, allo the other. And I was like, is allo like the plant? Mm-hmm. No, A-L-O. Arms length organization. But they say it like a word in a sentence.
Yeah.
So the ALO will have to work harder to achieve its corporate goals, blah, 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 blah. What? So there's part of that where I think my extroversion or my ability to be extroverted, because I'd be the same as you. There's been enough drama and music theater and projecting your voice and learning how to talk and knowing when to breathe and everything else that it doesn't really faze me, but it's more around having the extroversion in those situations to be forthright and say, what are we talking about? Mm. What is this about? Because that admission of not understanding and not an ability is a form of extroversion as well. That kind of forward confidence to say, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Again, I, week four, still don't know what's going on here. Please explain. I'm now 2 months in the job and there's every day I don't understand something.
Yeah.
And I am so introverted in those moments where I'm like, quietly Google, find out separately. Uh-huh. Don't let anyone know your weakness.
Well, the thing is that I know that the people around the table that I'm talking about have never been in a musical.
Mm.
Like I know the people around the table would never think about putting on a full sequin dress and, you know, putting on a 1920s night and doing a full 2 or 3 hours worth of gigs.
Concerting.
Do you know what I mean? Or go on tour, like I'm going on tour in the summer.
Pardon?
So, you know, I know that they would never do that, but they are much more convincing when it comes to describing their research.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was talking to Marty about this, first of all, I did realize the communication style that I've developed has been very therapeutic, and that is actually fine with me, mm-hmm. because I think that that is something that's more valuable to me going forward than necessarily being able to talk a load of bullshit in a meeting. But also, I know I've been there a year, but in terms of research age, I am young. I'm the youngest researcher there.
You're a fetus. Fetus in the research world.
Yes, total fetus, because it was 4 years of a PhD, almost two of which were in COVID, so there was no contact with the outside world, really. And before that, I was a counsellor, so I was in a totally different field. I have to just give myself a bit of grace and maybe come up with a spiel so that when somebody says, oh, can you update us on X, Y, and Z? I have a couple of spiels where I can say, well, there's been significant progress and that has been really dynamic, or something like that.
So,
do you know what I mean?
Again, I could not agree more. My version of spiel is that in work, when you meet someone for the first time, obviously you do the thing where you introduce yourself.
Yeah.
I, because again, hyper literal, was that my name is Danny. Here endeth the sentence.
Mm.
What introduce yourself means in corporate speak is name, your job title, your background, and your area of interest.
Uh-huh.
At what point was that made clear? When was that said? Never. It has never been said. It's never been written down. I haven't got an email. I've just learned over time that when I go, my name's Danny, and then you have, you know, 12 pairs of eyes looking at you on a Teams call being like, and?
Yeah.
Why are you here? What relevance do you bring to what we're talking about? You have to almost like you sort of really summon some sort of like, you know, I am marking my area that I'm speaking from. And it's just hard, I think, to constantly feel like you have to justify what you're doing. You have to justify your reason for it. It feels like you're being interviewed all the time. And I think interviews and being interviewed for things is traumatizing at the best of times.
It is, yeah.
So to be in that kind of, you know, constantly feeling like you're being judged or assessed or looked at or whatever, it's hard whenever it's just, you know, a Monday in the office and you're sitting on the table.
I know, again, I had a similar experience recently where I was on a Teams call and I said, I'm Emma. And then afterwards I was a bit like, oh, I should have said more about that. But then I realized my full name was on the thing.
Yes.
But I think the reason why they want that additional information is they want to know, like, what you say will be relevant and what they should direct to you. And so I have, from that, I was like, I should really say, oh, I'm Emma Loudon, you know, I'm the blah, blah, blah. No information is given on the podcast.
No.
You don't know what we do.
I said my surname earlier and I was like, oh, they'll find me.
No, I mean, you know, they will find us. They know who we are already.
But interestingly, did you know Danny Wilson, hyper common? One, it was a 1975 band with the song Mary's Prayer.
Oh, right, okay.
And two, multiple rugby players called Danny Wilson. I think a couple of football players. I had a geography teacher who every time he would say my name doing roll call, would be like, that's the name of a rugby player. And I was like, I know, Mr. Dunn, you've said it for 7 years. I am consciously aware. Thank you.
It's a great name.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I like it. Like
I'm
it very much.
Pro that kind of name.
Did I ever tell you I had a stage name?
No, my God. Talking about extroversion.
Ba, 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 ba. I developed this stage name mainly because, as I said, Danny Wilson was common as muck.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted something that separated me out from the crowd.
I cannot wait to hear this.
It's very benign, like, before you get too excited. So basically, so my name is spelled D-A-N-N-Y. However, a couple of years ago, I found some sort of document or piece of paper or something that had my maternal grandfather's name on it, which is also Danny. But he spelt his name D-A-N-N-I-E. Right? And I'm named after him.
That's very rare, the D-A-N-N-I-E.
D-A-N-N-I-E, especially for a man as well. Because usually the I-E is more of a feminine version of
names. Well, I've never even heard of the I-E. I've heard of the I, but...
So since then, mum and dad have kind of made this executive choice that my name, when in a family setting or whatever else, is spelt I-E. So we like sort of nod to, he's who I'm named after, rah, rah, rah. So I take that, D-A-N-N-I-E. It wouldn't be complicated if it wasn't me. And then my middle name is James. Mm. So then my stage name was Danny James.
Oh, right. Okay. That's actually brilliant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's spelled IE. And I was just like, oh my God, it's so artsy. It's so alternative.
I thought it was going to be like Danny Zephyr or something, wow, you know?
Because I think there'd be part of it where my like cringeometer inside myself would not cope, which actually is a good point on the extroversion, introversion side, your capacity for cringe. And your capacity to deal with cringe and your ickiness of things? Where do you think you stand on the cringe scale?
So I have a very low cringe tolerance.
Yes.
I think this is definitely where I want to kind of tie this all in a bow, because I think that this is also a cultural thing.
Oh.
And we mentioned, it might have been the last episode we recorded, we were talking about if you're Northern Irish, you keep your head down, you wouldn't brag about stuff or mm-hmm. anything like that. And a lot of the Americans I have met have been like preternaturally confident from a yes. very young age, I have noticed, right? And so I think that we are different. We're different in that way. Like you wouldn't want to be too confident. Basically, if anybody shows too much confidence, they're thought of as arrogant in this culture. So it may be in my nature to play it down. Mm-hmm. I certainly remember thinking that from a young age, that you didn't kind of act too confident. But, and also there's been other times in my life where I did feel very, very confident and it ended badly. So, you know, I think.
True words.
Yeah.
True words.
I always thought of the cringe thing as well related to, you know, pretension and being kind of allergic to being pretentious in any way. You know, my family would not be pretentious. I would see myself as quite a congruent person.
Mm.
And I don't think I have a lot of pretenses. I think I'm pretty much, you know, who I seem to be. And so I think there's part of that. Like, I really find it hard to go into meeting and be like, I'm the super confident researcher now. When that's not actually the case, you know? So the one thing that I think the big revelation for me with reading this book, Quiet by Susan Cain, which I would recommend to anybody who ever kind of thinks, I wonder, am I a touch of an introvert or whatever, is that sense of being drained by social interaction.
Yeah.
And I have seen some memes recently which have really dealt with that issue, like kind of, you know, the extrovert goes in and feeds off the social interaction and the introvert goes in and enjoys the social interaction but is drained of their energy as a result of it. And I do find that, particularly if it's something like a conference or something like that, I need that time in the hotel room where I'm like, this is totally zoning out and don't have to put on a normal face for anybody or anything.
I mean, I would challenge that a wee bit in the sense that I think, I think there's part of it where it's the drained, for an introvert, it's the drainedness about being around other people, but it's also the drainedness from the performativeness of that kind of sphere, where it's not so much about others are taking energy from you, it's that you're having to exert energy to be on and be aware and be switched.
Yeah.
Whereas, because I would be the same, you know, that I have times whenever I just need phone time. I just need to decompress in a dark room and sit on my phone and just scroll mindlessly for an hour and just allow kind of, you know, my jaw to slacken, my eyes to droop and just sort of go into...
Yeah. I want my double chin to come out fully and I want to be scrolling.
A millimeter drool.
Yeah, just not looking at anything.
I am only 50% human at this time. I am just existing. But then I think as well as that, the strength with introversion sometimes is the power that comes from being on your own and really reveling in your own company.
Yeah.
And it is not a skill that I have. It's especially with COVID. It has
been we are almost the same person. Just
it's terrible. I have. So in my last job, it was so prominently working from home on so many days where there would be 3 or 4 days where I wouldn't see another human outside. Yeah. I wouldn't leave the house sometimes because I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd just be like, God, I'm miserable. But then not being able to connect the dots around why. And then realizing you just need to go out of the house and go for a walk or whatever, but never in the moments that it was happening, being able to say, Danny, get off your arse, off your phone and go leave the house.
Yeah.
Go outside, get some air, be in with other people. And I think there's a strength that introverts have where that ability to really harness the energy of your own company and revel in it.
I mean, so I said that I know some really true extroverts and I don't know any true introverts, but I do know some people here who have a lot of those introvert pieces out of that stew. Mm. They have been just going, picking out introvert pieces and they really enjoy being alone for long periods, much longer than I could be alone. Like whenever I came back from, I was at a family thing at the weekend, there was a bazillion of us. I don't know how many Loudons were there, but it seemed like a lot. And I think by the end of it, everybody was happy to see the back of the Loudons. They were like, yes, bye, we love you, but you know, you've been a lot for us.
You've been loud.
You've been loud. There's been a lot of drinking, a lot of music and bye bye. And so then when I got back, was it the Monday or the Sunday? So the Sunday, Marty got unexpectedly called into work and the boys wanted to go and see their dad. And so everybody left the house and they were gone for like 6 or 7 hours. Uh-huh. And I loved it. It was lovely. But if that had been not after a situation where yes. we were all filled together, I would have been like, fuck's sake, by myself.
Left I am alone. The loneliest person.
Because I don't do well by myself. No. And even though I love the idea of like going for a meal by myself, or going for a coffee, going to a coffee mm-hmm. shop by myself, or like going to cinema by myself, I don't think I could ever do it. Like I'm too yeah. reliant on other people.
I went to cinema once by myself. I just took a notion of less like, I want to go see a film. Everyone is being not proactive enough to go do it with me, so I'll go do it on my own.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time being, it was fine, but I was very consciously aware that I am sitting as far away from other humans. I'm in the corner. I am like just sort of watching the film and then getting out of here as quickly as I can, because you're just, I don't know, it brings in a whole extra level of, I don't know, paranoia about what people are thinking and saying and feeling about you. And whereas having company doesn't. Like it normalizes things in a way that being on your own doesn't.
I know. Or you just feel like, well, I'm protected by this company that I have here. I mean, I know going to a coffee shop by yourself is very normal. And yet, I would just take it out. I would take the coffee out. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm very, very bad at that. So
there's actually, just as you talk about that, though, there's a scene in one of my favorite films of all time. It's called First Wives Club. And there's a scene in it where I think Bette Midler's character has had a fight with the group or whatever, and she has to go out for dinner on her own. And I think in my mind, every time I think about doing one of those activities on my own, I am Bette Midler in my heart, and I am in a restaurant and I'm having to like push my way in between two tables to sit down. And there's the bit in it where the waiter leans over the table and puts his hand on top of the other half of cutlery and he goes, "Are you by yourself?" Because he's obviously some sort of, not from America person. And Bette Midler goes, "See," in this really like tortured way. Uh-huh. And in my head, I'm like, God, the fucking horrificness of being on your own.
Actually, it sounds kind of fabulous. If it's Bette Midler doing it, then it was, I'm like, hold on, I'm way out immediately. It
was pre-glow up. She turns into a very fabulous woman. But at that time, she was very sad and being divorced and everything else. But yes, I think it's just the idea of, there's a weird judgment that you feel like is being imposed on you from other people.
Yeah.
When there's really not. No one cares.
No, there's not. I just think your anxiety gets the better of you.
That old beast.
But, you know, again, there's no answers to this. And I think whatever parts of the introvert-extrovert stew you have on your plate, there is not one thing wrong with you.
And actually, I think our conversation more than else has shown us that there is strength on all sides.
Absolutely.
I think, especially with COVID, COVID has really challenged people who relied maybe too heavily on others for something that they should be able to generate themselves.
Shit, yes, that's what I was going to say. So the true extroverts, right? I've mentioned them like 3 times at this point, haven't brought them up. So my son, my 14-year-old son, is one of the most truly extroverted people that I've ever met. He was a tiny bit shy maybe when he was a bit younger about meeting new people, but not in any kind of noticeable way. And he is constantly social and enjoys talking to people. So he's just about to turn 15. And when we were at that family gathering, he was standing up playing original songs that he had written on the guitar with seemingly no bother to do that. Do you know what I mean? So he is one of, and my dad was a real extrovert. He loved people around him, loved parties. He was always performing. He was always doing, you know, comedy bits. He was always doing sketches. He was always doing something like that. And I think in lockdown, so I loved lockdown, and I know a lot of people that did, and I think of it fondly now. But there was some people who hated it. Hated it.
Hello, party of one. Because
they couldn't, they needed that contact with, you know, with the outside world and with multiple people. And whenever lockdown ended, some of us were like cautiously stepping back into the world, and other people were like, party, the bar, you know, the thing. And so I do think that there are people that are quite far on the other end of the spectrum.
Well, actually, I was going to say, I think lockdown really highlighted to me how disabling my need for other people is. Because it was the first, so I broke up with my ex, we went into lockdown, I'd never lived on my own before, and all of a sudden wasn't allowed to see other people unless it was part of work, because I obviously we didn't furlough. So it was just so consciously aware of how easily bored I get, how much stimulation I need, like, from other people to kind of move through to the day or whatever. And it's only been through time and just, this is not a healthy way to be, like, to be so reliant on others to get something that I should be able to generate myself.
Yeah.
That you kind of are like, no, you need to work on this a little bit, because it's just, it's too much pressure to constantly be needing other people to fulfill you in this way.
Yeah. To be fair, I had like the perfect amount of people in my house. I had two children, one dog and one husband to be. And I like all of them very much. And but it wasn't like too many. So there wasn't like four or five kids or, you know, what, any kind of extra family members or anything. So, you know, I enjoyed it that way. But I feel like we need to move on because I'm worried about time.
Yes.
No, it's fine. It's just we are going to try and keep this tight.
Emma is a strict timekeeper.
Shall we go for normal on TikTok?
Yes. Sorry, I thought you were going to launch into your bit there. Yes, we'll do normal on TikTok. So this week's normal on TikTok is coming at a slightly different slant.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the normal on TikTok, which is, I mean, quite a scary situation, I think, for anybody in the LGBT plus community, or I should say LGBTQIA plus community, which is the new legislation that's come in Florida. Against the, or sort of criminalizing the public display of drag shows and drag events to minors.
Right, okay.
So, I mean, there's other legislation as well, but I think for the purposes of this and for the segment that we have here, I would encourage everyone to go have a read of what's happening in Florida, I think, as well as that, because Florida is a precursor state for a lot of other states in America that are also leaning towards this legislation, where they're sort of looking at what Florida's doing and then thinking about emulating it in their own states.
No one should ever emulate what Florida's doing, guys.
So, the normal on TikTok part is that these people who are legislators in their own right and working in government are making laws actively prohibiting art to young people because they believe that it is somehow increasing the likelihood of moral deviance
in
some way, shape,
or form. They don't have a leg to stand on this.
Goodness.
They just don't like it.
They just don't like it, first of all. Second of all, at what point did we begin marshalling art? Like, when did that start happening? Because at the end of the day, drag is art. Drag in its purest form is just art. It's not sexual. It's not, you know, no more sexual than burlesque would be, which is also art. It's just a version of it. And at the same time, like, so the thing all started out because of drag queens reading children's stories.
Mm-hmm. Which we have here
We had here. Yep. It would also met with a lot of vitriol at the time as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's just this idea that, you know, government figures, because they have the ability to, can start policing something that really they have no right to police. They have no right to start wading out
they
into it.
They don't have any need to police it either.
And also, there was no harm done. And there's also all these fantastic, you know, supporters and allies have come out and started speaking about the risk to children that drag queens pose and doing all these statistics of everyone who has ever engaged in a school shooting. None of them have been drag queens. Of everyone who has ever been convicted of molesting children, none of them have been drag queens.
Yeah.
A lot of them may have been priests, but none of them were drag queens.
Yeah.
There have been religious figures who've been involved in this. There has been far-right politicals that have been involved in this. But yet, no drag queens.
No.
So really interested to know the scientific reasoning for targeting drag queens as a separate group. But I think the normal on TikTok part of this was just, I think, that kind of concern that TikTok gives me about it presenting all these things to the world in a, what it seems like a very normal way. And actually touching on what we talked about earlier there, using a bit of that very kind of reaffirming corporate language to seem to justify something that to your eye outside of that sphere, we're like, this is mental. Like, why is this happening? How is this being done? But they talk about it in this way where you're just sort of like, you can imagine someone who was a fence sitter listening to this and thinking, God, yeah, I didn't think that was a problem. And now actually that's a huge problem.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So do you mean like, because the algorithm, you'll either get propaganda that's against something or for something, right?
So my algorithm is very liberal, but the liberal algorithm helpfully will usually tag a video that shows the very right wing outside of things, where it highlights this as a kind of like, look at our hyper altruistic lawmakers saving our children from this moral deviance that drag queens are going to perpetuate to them.
Yeah.
All that it's doing, because apparently drag queens can make you gay.
Well, and it's just homophobia really though, isn't it?
It's
not even very well disguised, is the thing. And just on that algorithm thing, we had a conversation last week or whenever we last recorded a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about other issues that are happening with regards to trans rights and people who are calling themselves gender critical or something like that. And so we had a conversation about that, and then I was on my doing my videos on something. It might have been Facebook, because I go between like Facebook videos, Instagram reels, and TikTok, because I'm, you know, an elder millennial. So I know that none of the young people know that there's videos on Facebook. They're probably not even on it. But so I was on that, and it was all stuff about how trans women shouldn't be in bathrooms, or so it was all stuff like, you know, JK Rowling has been vilified despite being wonderful and blah blah blah, all this kind of stuff, which I was like, whoa. And you know when people say, oh, I mentioned apples a lot and then I got all these adverts for apples or whatever, I really feel like that there was an algorithm target, which was a gender critical algorithm, which was coming at me, and I was like, How do I undo this now? Because you could be, you know, you could watch enough of those to be kind of like, oh, do you know what? I actually think there might be some weight in this. Mm-hmm. And the same with the drag queen thing, because, you know, I just wonder, say a woman, right, was dressed in really colorful stuff, really over the top stuff, and went to read a story to children. Would they be like, it's too colourful, too, you know, like what is the thing? So it's the fact that it's a man dressed in women's clothing.
Absolutely.
And so what is it? Is it 2023 or is it the 50s? Like what?
Yes.
I mean, come on.
Well, further to that, I mean, by that logic then, in you know, Shakespeare plays, a lot of the female parts are played by men.
Yeah.
So if that's art form, are we then saying that children aren't allowed to go see live Shakespeare because it only is allowed to be whatever gender you were assigned at birth is the one that you're allowed to play? And therefore, oh, well, sorry, does that mean that we lose that whole... Like, it's just, it begins to marshal artwork in a way that I think has really dangerous connotations if it's not checked. It's really dangerous sort of domino of this is the only things that are allowed to be. But my point to sort of bring it back to... the what's not wrong with us mentality is that, A, it's not wrong to question these things. It's not wrong to look at them with a kind of critical lens and think, what is my own view on this? You know, not a view based around what I've watched or seen or otherwise. And secondly, you're not wrong to be upset about it. I think there's a part of this where, because it's not on your doorstep and it's not happening here, therefore it isn't happening to us. But it only takes one kind of legislator to make some sort of law or ruling or something that then gains traction, and then slowly 100%. But surely it starts to filter.
And I think the thing is that people should realize that this is not, if you're not a drag queen, that doesn't mean that you don't have to worry about this thing. The legislation in America that's kind of spreading across different states, you know, is impacting the rights of multiple individuals, including women and their ability to access life-saving reproductive health care that could avoid them dying, which, and to be honest, we've known what's happened with that in this country, and people have died as a result of not being able to get an abortion or have had to go overseas and had a horrible experience because it was made a medical procedure was made illegal in this country. And trans healthcare rights are being impacted. Like there is a wave of stuff which we all hoped would stop when Trump went out, and it hasn't.
No.
And the reason it hasn't is because that mentality had already taken hold. Trump was a symptom of the mentality rather than, you know, necessarily the cause or whatever of it.
Yeah.
So absolutely, this is your problem. If people's are having this kind of attitude, outlawing drag story time, like...
It's then to suggest that, well, we can't do it because it's sexualized. Are you telling me that no child has ever seen a woman in a bathing suit? Ever? Full stop, exclamation mark.
Well, I don't think drag queens are being sexual when they're reading.
No.
Drag queens can absolutely be sexual.
But at the same time, if it's a drag queen who is out performing and it's in a venue that has allows children in because it doesn't prohibit them with drinking laws or whatever else, then the performance isn't going to be overtly sexual anyway. Like, it's... If the children, like, these are people
who
are not...
But it may or may not be, but the drag queens who are going into libraries and reading to children are not being sexual at the time, just like any other adult who went in and read to children. They're not...
So,
drag queens are not inherently sexual people. This is the thing that you're missing. And it's because you are... Oh, God. See, this is the problem. I get judgmental. But you, it seems unusual to you... white man in government in fucking America.
Mm-hmm.
But just because it seems unusual to you doesn't mean it's actually wrong or there's anything. It just means you're not familiar with it. And maybe actually you should see about getting familiar with it. It's, okay.
I
didn't know I was going to get so riled up by this one.
No, I think just to finish off on this, I want to be very clear that, you know, this... The part we're talking about now is just one small part of a very large piece of legislation that's coming out, Florida and a good bit in Tennessee as well. And I would encourage people to go out and have a read and just inform themselves and make themselves aware.
Danny, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Was there a TikTok that you saw that this
there was a TikTok that I saw. There was.
Are we going to link to it?
Okay, I am going to link to it. But I think in the fairness of non-judgmentalness, a lot of the TikToks that have brought it to my attention come from a skew of harsh judgmentalness against the legislation and against what's happening in Florida and against what's happening to it. So in the spirit of true democracy, I would encourage people, we'll find a link to the legislation and put it in the bio for this.
Wow, this has been a very different normal on TikTok.
I think it's just because we're taking things from a political space and you just want to be very mindful of, it's not our job to make people have an opinion on these things one way or the other. It's our job just to sort of say that this exists.
Yes, and also this isn't our job, guys, just to let you know.
Wouldn't that be a dream?
So, can I tell you a little bit about... why that cat's not okay.
Why is that cat not okay?
This week on our wonderful, ever-giving...
Guys, I hope you're sitting down with a cup of tea. This is a lot. This is a full soap opera.
So I have a couple of different things. I've been periodically just visiting next door and taking screenshots of the things that happen because I have no idea how to save a post if it goes out of the way, right? Mm. So we've had the whole spectrum of delight from Nextdoor. Mm-hmm. I've even made a new category of things that you can find on Nextdoor. So I'm going to start with, this is a classic Nextdoor complaint about dog poo, right? Beautiful picture of a literal mound of dog poo. It looks like it came out of a horse. And this is the post. Once again left disgusted by locals who walk their dogs and neglect to clean up their shit emoji. The apartments at, insert street name here, seem to be a popular spot for lazy, arrogant individuals to cowardly walk their dogs round in the early AM and leave a complete mess. Lots of kids live round here and are always out playing after school. God forbid any of them fall and get this in their eyes. I was met by this mess outside my house at 8:15 on the school run. Your dog, your poop. Angry face, sweary emoji. So the reason why I'm laughing is just the image of a kid falling face first into the mound of dog
poo. But you know that's a thing.
Well, I know that if you get dog poo in your eyes, you go blind. But have you ever known a child has gone blind through dog poo?
I'll tell you better than that. There is
Christ
a picture.
Almighty.
No, there is a picture, right? In Belfast.
Uh-huh.
What are they called? Emma, you might have to, because I work out where this is. You know the playing fields at the far side of Craig of Glen?
Mm-hmm.
What are they called? It's their person's name. the thingy playing fields.
John, you mean
you go, like, if you go through Craigie Glen and you come to the road and you go left up there, there's playing fields up there in that
up
hill.
On Mance Road?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, we're regardless.
Around there.
Anyway.
Daniel Wilson.
Anyway. It's Danny IE, thank you. My point was, in that playing field, there is a sign, and on the sign, there is a picture of a child who fell in dog poo, got dog poo in their eyes, and went blind.
That's like one of the only children that that's happened to, though, Danny.
It's like a cover of a cigarette packet, but rather than being lungs, it's a child who's all like huge bulging eyes and it's all disfigured and everything.
So, I mean, I heard about that when I was a kid as well, but I never even came close to falling face first into dog poo. So anyway, that's just the kind of dog poo melodrama. There was also a literal "Is that cat okay?" post.
Uh-huh.
So there was a picture of a highly emaciated cat.
Oh God, love a cat!
Right, and somebody saying, "I just found this cat and one of its kittens in the alleyway. It doesn't look well. Well, I don't know what to do. I brought them in. I brought the poor wee thing inside." And what I find interesting about this post wasn't so much the Good Samaritan doing that; it was the level of, like, she gained sainthood through this act that literally any fucker would do, unless they were a total animal hater or, you know, allergic to cats or whatever. She brought this poor cat and one kitten that she found inside, and then she found another kitten later. People were like, please, please go and look for more kittens. Please, please go and look again. Oh, you're an angel. I can't believe you're an angel sent from heaven. Thank you so much for looking after this cat. I am not exaggerating. There was 20 posts like that. You are so, I can't believe you've done this. It's wonderful. Thank you so much for looking after this angel. Have you taken them to the vet? Please look after them and their babies and find them. When she found another kitten, they lost their minds. Their literal minds. So, I mean, I just find that was quite interesting, you know, in terms of the reactions of, I mean, it can was I, all women.
Can I just come in quickly just on the cat adage, just because it's made me think of one. There is a local charity that supports cats being caught, spayed, neutered, and then rehomed. And this cat charity, they're very, very vocal on Facebook. And the amount of drama that they have of this level of like, kittens found, had to go out in the rain, get them, brought them back in close to my bosom and my heat. Snowy has died. R.I.P. on the Rainbow Bridge, Snowy. You were a great cat. I knew you for 14 minutes.
I want to just clarify my laughing. I'm an animal lover. I'm a vegetarian. It's the melodrama. It's the level of melodrama. So, like, this got to the point where people were going, you have such a good heart. I just can't. I hope whoever dumped them gets their reward. They will get it in the afterlife. And then people saying, you know, so this was 5 days ago. And then 4 days ago, people were still commenting, poor baby, my heart is breaking. Thank goodness you were there. Somebody else then came back to post, just wondering how they got on at the vets today.
Yeah.
You know, like, partly making sure that she did take them
to
the vets.
Yes, I'm checking up on your work.
But also just like those cats have not been out of their heads since then. And, you know, I mean, in a way I feel bad about making fun of them because they're very good hearted and it's lovely that they care so much about this.
Well, I think in our defense though, I would echo a lot of her sentiments and things. I'm like, you know, worried about the cats, but in a fleeting moment of, that's an awful thing. Like, you should never abandon animals outside. Like, these monsters who put animals in bags and chuck them in rivers and whatever else, horrific people.
Yeah.
They should get their comeuppance. I agree. Am I going to vocally put that on a social media platform like Nextdoor or Facebook or anything else? No, I'm not.
Maybe if I've had a couple of wines.
Maybe. But I think that's the part that we are poking a little bit of jest at, is just the connection between strong emotion, public display of strong emotion on Facebook with emojis to justify and further develop emotion more. Like, if you're so angry that you put down an angry face as your way of emoting, there is something in there that can be made fun of a little
bit. Yeah, I know. And I'm gently poking fun because it's, you know, it's terrible. But those cats seem to have done quite well. And there was two kittens and, you know, that woman's looked after them. And she already had like three cats. So she then had like six cats in the house. I think she might have been out trolling for cats, to be honest. I think she was looking for cats to rescue. Well, she wanted the cred.
Could you imagine what she would have done if that Matt Hancock ruling had come through?
Oh, my God.
They would have.
For those who don't know, Danny, please explain.
This is the political podcast now. Apologies. We had
feeling very political at the moment.
We've been through our umbilical and, you know, pregnancy era. Now we're into a political era. Basically, for those who don't know, Matt Hancock was having a memoir written. He had a writer who was in doing that. And as part of this memoir, the writer got access to umpteen WhatsApp messages and things. And in one of these WhatsApp messages, there was official correspondence between Matt Hancock and somebody else within government during the time of COVID, where they discussed putting out a decree to the land that pet owners must go out and kill their cats. And not in a suggestive, in a, we are telling you this is the rules because your cats are giving us
COVID.
Could
you imagine people that? Like,
could you imagine? And then you'd have just like the whole, you know, world psyche towards cat culture would be evaporated overnight.
You know, my skeptical brain just switched on there briefly to wonder, is that true? Is that message true? Or is that some journalist who's been like, this would make a really good story and it would go viral?
Yes. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I would encourage, again, Googleability of all these things, just to have a wee skeptical eye across it all and have a poke around and see what you find online. But certainly I have seen a couple articles where they talk about it in just a kind of, what? And for why? And what was the reasoning behind this being suggested to the Minister for Health at the time? Or him suggest, I can't remember which way around it went, but just, what? Anyway, shocking.
What I found when I opened Nextdoor was a post of a person saying, this used to be a great site where you could go to get recommendations on local businesses and interesting information on the local area. Now it is just passing aggressive moaning, I presume they mean passive aggressive moaning, about dogs and dog poo. Seriously, folks, get a life. Okay, so the thing that I always end up wanting to share more than one thing. But to be honest, the main thing that happened was there was this unusual post, which I think...
Oh, the best one! Oh my goodness, yes. Sorry.
So I think it might have been deleted because it probably created a lot of drama in itself.
Yeah.
But basically, it said... I don't have the link, but I have... Oh, you have the link? Yeah, click on the link to see if it's still there.
Yeah.
So basically, it was a picture of a local garage... here that we have, garage as in it gives petrol and has like a mini supermarket inside it. And the post is this, just saw a heated confrontation at the garage that I'm mentioning. The poor victim of the two got a petrol pump forced down their throat after an evil prat had the nerve to ask him what goes down better between unleaded or diesel. Absolutely disgusting. I'm just going to read that some part of it again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The poor victim of the two got a petrol pump forced down their throat after the evil prat had the nerve to ask him what goes down better between unleaded or diesel. Absolutely disgusting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So my first thought is this can't be real. They're being, this is a metaphor that it was forced down the throat. Nobody actually is going to put a petrol pump down the throat of somebody. Has there been an update?
No, I have a is that cat okay? That's literally just happened. Sorry.
Oh my God. This is live as it happens, folks.
No, in answer to your previous... in answer to your previous one, the petrol one has been deleted.
Aha.
It's gone now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So we will never know really if it's true, but basically what it seemed was, because people all wanted to clarify, people were like, what?
Yeah.
Like just two question marks?
Yes.
Sorry, this is a joke, surely. And the person clarified, no, to be clear, the man came and pushed and said, what goes down better, unleaded or diesel? And, or the other person asked him that and then got the petrol pump shoved down their throat. So one person was the asker and the other person got the petrol pump shoved down their throat, which just seems like the most ridiculous thing to happen at a petrol station.
Can you imagine that interaction of two people coming together at a petrol pump, having a discourse, it ending badly, and the guy reaches around, and a petrol pump thing is long as well.
Yeah.
How is he getting that into that other person's mouth?
How is the person standing there letting him do it?
Letting him put a petrol pump in his mouth, and also the danger of it all.
Yes. Well, like, somebody pointed out on that post, they said, oh, somebody was trying to unalive somebody, which is a thing people say, mm-hmm. believe. I'm an elder millennial.
They don't say, they can't say murder on the internet. On
Okay.
Gets things removed.
Right. Well, if somebody did do that to another person, mm-hmm. they would potentially be trying to unalive them, particularly if you that pump is connected and you could press the trigger and put petrol down their throat.
My God.
But just like whack them around the face with it or something, you know, why would you
then
put it down their throat?
Oh my God.
So the point about this is because we will ultimately never know if it really happened or whether that person was misinterpreting it or what exactly happened, or I mean, it's just so ridiculous if it did happen.
Yes.
But it is a new type of post that I have categorized as high drama.
Yes.
So we had another one a few weeks ago, which was high drama, which was the washing machine blowing up a few minutes after the man had literally blew up. So that's the type of high drama post that we have. So we've got a new category on Nextdoor. So, you know, last week I was thinking, I'm not sure if Nextdoor is that interesting, but no, it has proven me wrong.
Can I show you this? Is that cat
yes,
okay?
So there's, and is live, that cat okay?
Live.
Happened? Okay.
So as you heard at the start of this podcast, the weather here is quite torrential.
Oh,
This guy has gone on Nextdoor, took a video of a goose that has landed in the road and has said, just saw the wild goose. Who should I phone? Tried the council and left a voicemail. It's just of this goose
looking
standing
confused.
Up, looking confused, being like, oh, it's really snowy. And the bird probably like, probably shouldn't fly right now. I'll just wait till it's less snowy. And this person's street was just in its flight path. And this man is like, who do we call? Who is the help? Where
the
are we?
Council isn't answering. Please. Imagine the people getting that voicemail tomorrow as well.
And they'd be like, don't touch the bloody... We had a terrible case of avian flu in Belfast there recently, so they'd probably like, don't touch the bloody bird.
Oh, God, yeah, they will. They'd be like, move away from the bird, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So funny.
Oh, God. Well, there we go. I mean, you know, who would have thunk it? Who would have thought we'd be here, Danny, still talking about TikTok and Nextdoor?
Because they are just the gift that keeps on giving.
I know. They are. And I think it's that... The human experience exists therein from the really unusual experience that is interesting enough to get, you know, viral on TikTok to the literally everyday,
yes,
the mundane, but no less ridiculous
no.
experiences that are shared on Nextdoor.
Further to that, so we'll do our normal roundup.
Yes.
And then I would like to propose something.
Okay.
So our roundup for today is, number one, we believe that people can very easily feel like there is something wrong with them in terms of how extroverted or introverted they are in a situation. But I hope that through conversations, a bit of thought has come into the fact that there's really nothing wrong with either side. And actually, both have strengths that really, you know, the most well-rounded of people will hopefully be able to tap into either side of them at will and be able to exercise as best you can. And if you're struggling with one side of them, then you take this as a kind of little nudge to say the parts that you are good at, keep fostering them, and the parts that you're struggling with the other ones, it just takes a wee bit of work.
Yeah.
A wee bit of work and you'll get there. And also, some people just live very full lives just being the one version or the other quite happily.
Totally. But also, I would say that I reject the it's a spectrum thing.
Yes.
And I feel like it's more like a stew.
Stew.
I might come up with a better metaphor than a stew, but I do feel like it's not that we are on one end or the other or, you know, somewhere in between. It's more that we have different parts that meet some of those criteria that we might have previously thought about as an introvert or extrovert.
Absolutely. And then on Normal on TikTok this week, it was this legislation that's come in Florida around drag queens, transgender people, and specifically we were talking about just the real scary sort of erasure of one aspect of the art form with regards to children being allowed to go and see drag shows and things like that there and how it's being prohibited and everything else. And just encouraging people to go and investigate this and inform yourselves and to not be frightened of kind of poking around at these things a wee bit more. Because as Emma says, it wasn't all that long ago that we ourselves were having to campaign for things that in other parts of the world seemed very, very normal and have only... in the last couple of years, being able to get some forward movement there. And then on a lighter note on Nextdoor, we have the wondrous introduction of Next Door High Drama.
Yeah. We hope to revisit Next Door High Drama. I have no doubt that it will come up again. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, people, even if they're making up petrol pump related incidents, which is a criminal offence as well.
Yes. Like,
and I think that might be why it was is taken down, because I think they may have been like, oh shit, I'm a witness. The police have contacted me now. I better take down my Next Door post that I put up about it. And also imagine coming home and being like, I know where this is going. Next Door.
So now that we've come to the end of that, I would like to make a proposition, Emma.
Proposition? Okay.
My proposition is this. We are now on episode 7.
Yes.
In 3 more episodes, it'll be episode 10. My proposition is, for episode 10, we should do a drunken Q&A.
I cannot.
Parallel minds.
So today, I was literally thinking, every now and again, we should do a drunk version of this podcast.
Yes.
There is a risk that people will like the drunk version more than the... But you know what? It's just a special treat where Danny and Emma get drunk, we do a drunk podcast, and we'll probably be more hilarious than we normally are, because that is what happens when we drink alcohol.
And also probably require Emma to do a lot more editing of like, can't say that! So I think it's just in the hopeful future that these will be published ahead of time to encourage questions, thoughts, statements around... What's not wrong with us?
Oh my God, please send us stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've got an email.
We do have an email.
What's not wrong with us at gmail.com.
Fabulous. Yes. Do
you
send
will
us
find
stuff.
Us on Twitter and you will find us on Instagram.
Yes. Send us stuff. Let us know what statement or thing that you feel people think is wrong with them that you're actually like, no, no, no. Or something that you think is wrong with you that you would like a point of pride in. If it results in some sort of safeguarding concern, we cannot be held responsible for anything that comes out the far end.
Oh my God, a trust employee through and through.
Please do not send us anything that we have to involve the police over. That would be great.
No, but I think it's the key thing is that something that you know in your heart isn't wrong with you, but then maybe people have said to you, oh, that's strange, or you've thought, this is unusual.
Yes.
I understand this experience to be different than other people's. That's our niche right there.
Less illegal act, more nuance.
Yeah. Until that time, I would like to say to you, Danny, i.e. James, a.k.a. Danny Wilson.
Yes.
There is not one thing wrong with you, Emma, my friend.
I really needed that this week. Emma, there is not one thing wrong with you either.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Till next time.